Hi, this is Anne Merchant, and welcome to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council, collectively known as the National Academies. Okay, so when was the last time you learned an interesting fact about chemistry? I'll give you a minute. Okay, let's compare notes. For me, it was last weekend in my living room. I was reading an article in the New York Times magazine about why some people are repulsed by foods containing cilantro. It turns out that the aroma of cilantro contains similar chemical characteristics to the compounds found in soap. It's no surprise that my last educational encounter with chemistry was outside of school, and chances are you weren't sitting in a classroom during your last experience either. Not because we didn't learn any chemistry in the classroom, but because, by some estimates, most individuals only spend as little as 9% of their lives in schools. This means that everything else you learn throughout life, including things other than chemistry, happens in everyday experiences such as family discussions, reading magazines and newspapers, watching TV, or surfing the internet. We also learn science from visits to museums, zoos, aquariums, libraries, and science centers, or participation in after-school programs, volunteer groups, science cafes, or public lecture series. Experts refer to these various contexts as informal environments for science learning. But in these informal settings, some initial analyses have found little primary chemistry content compared to other scientific disciplines. To improve the public communication of chemistry, the Chemical Sciences Roundtable, in the Division on Earth and Life Studies at the National Research Council, is organizing a workshop in late May to examine science content, especially chemistry, found on television, the web, and in museums, as well as other informal educational settings. We were fortunate enough to speak with two of the workshop participants on this subject to frame the discussion ahead of the event. Bill Carroll is Vice President of Industry Issues at Occidental Chemical Corporation. He's also a former president of the American Chemical Society. Stephen Lyons is an award-winning writer and producer who has worked on 3 PBS Nova documentaries, including one about the life and career of the late African-American chemist Percy Julian. Bill Carroll begins by talking a little bit about exactly why the public understanding of chemistry is so important.
Well, I think it impacts our public support for research funding for those of us who are in academia, because in the end, budgets are created and ratified by legislators because the public is interested in that, or at least agrees to it. And for those of us in industry, it kind of impacts our public license to operate. If we're mysterious, if we appear to be secretive, then the public trusts us less. And both those things, the public engagement, the public trust, matters to the way we do business, no matter what sector we're in the chemistry enterprise.
Okay, so now I know what you're thinking. What Bill just said could also be applied to all scientific disciplines. Public trust is important no matter what. So why does chemistry need special treatment? Well, think about it. Compared to other disciplines, how often does chemistry actually make the news? We're constantly bombarded by stories on climate change, evolution, particle physics, and new biotechnologies. Oftentimes, chemistry plays a role in understanding each of these topics, but it's rarely the central focus of the story. But this issue is pervasive across all media, not just the news. Stephen Lyons articulates this point with a story about his involvement in the Percy Julian project at NOVA.
I guess the moment I became aware of this as a problem was when I was working on the Percy Julian program for NOVA a few years ago. Toward the end of the project, someone in the education department at WGBH said that whenever she goes to the National Science Teachers Association meeting representing NOVA, the science teachers always ask, "Have you got anything new on chemistry?" And usually the answer was no. There wasn't anything new on chemistry. The Percy Julian program was the first one that NOVA had produced in 12 years on chemistry. And it was that comment that made me aware for the first time that chemistry was sort of undercovered on television. I hadn't really paid any attention to it. But when I started looking into it, I realized that, in fact, it was. I use the word neglected. It's just rare that you find programs on chemistry on Nova or any other science television program. That's when I became aware that, at least as far as TV is concerned, this is an issue.
So the question is, why is chemistry so poorly represented? Is it a lack of communicators? Well, we know that astrophysics has Neil deGrasse Tyson, evolutionary biology has E.O. Wilson, and psychology has Steven Pinker. But where are the spokespeople for chemistry? Part of the problem is that chemistry is always one or two steps removed from the personally relevant benefits that chemistry enables. But Bill Carroll thinks that it might also have something to do with the way that chemistry is taught in the classroom.
Chemistry, in the way we teach it in modern times, is less and less stink and bang and much more math. And I think that part of it turns people off as well. You know, if I were teaching high school chemistry, and I realize people have tests to teach to and all the rest of this, but if I were teaching high school chemistry, the single thing that I would want to leave them with after two semesters would be why this is useful. And we may use the math, we'll do the experiments, do all the rest of this stuff, but in the end, they have to appreciate that everything that you touch at some point or another was enabled by people who do chemistry. And we don't let people leave high school with that impression. All we leave them with is that this is a deeply math-based science that may or may not have some relevance to what they do, and all they know is they're relieved to leave.
Steve Lyons has a different perspective. He acknowledges all of the points raised so far, but he feels that the most important issue that makes chemistry particularly difficult to communicate is intrinsic to the type of research that chemists are doing in the first place.
My personal feeling is that the most important reason that chemistry is underrepresented in the media is because of the questions that chemists ask. In other sciences, like biology and astronomy and cosmology and physics and so forth, the questions that scientists ask tend to be big, interesting questions that it's very easy for the public to get engaged in. You know, how did the human species evolve? What is the origin of the universe? What is the future of the universe? How did ancient civilizations die out? Things like that that are easy for people to grasp and to get interested in. Chemists, I think, tend to focus on narrower, more practical questions, like how to improve a particular molecular reaction, make it more efficient or improve its yield, things like that. So it's harder for people to identify with those issues and get excited about them. So I think that's probably the most important reason that chemistry doesn't appear in the media as much as the other sciences.
Now, of course, it's not really realistic to expect chemists to redirect their research toward different questions simply because they're more likely to obtain more interest from the media. But what they can do is work with the public information offices within their institutions to reframe their research in a way that emphasizes the relevance to society. For example, a few years ago, Dan Nocera, a chemist at MIT, discovered a new catalyst for splitting water into its constituent parts, oxygen and hydrogen. Since the discovery was very important for innovation in energy storage technology, Nocera was able to collaborate with his press office to bring considerable media attention to his work. These issues, of course, only scratch the surface of the problems and possible solutions that the chemistry community can take to improve public engagement with their field. As Stephen Lyons pointed out, there is tremendous potential for improvement considering the financial resources available to the widely successful chemical and pharmaceutical industries should they decide to make this a priority. For those listeners that will be in the D.C. area on Wednesday, May 26th, and Thursday, May 27th, you can attend this workshop, although an RSVP is required. For more information about the event and instructions on how to RSVP, go to the website dells.nas.edu/chemical. Following the workshop, for those of you who cannot attend, a summary report of the ideas and findings discussed will be published and available for free online at nap.edu. My name is Anne Merchant, and you've been listening to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academies, advisors to the nation on science, engineering, and medicine. Be sure to visit us at our website at nationalacademies.org, where we have more than 3,000 books and publications available full text to read free online.